In the Radu Shakespeare Company, we like to think we play the fool. But Adrian Scarborough, noted Olivier Award-winning actor and British national treasure, is actually playing the fool at the National Theatre in King Lear with Simon Russell Beale as King Lear. Adrian, what's that like?
It's very wonderful. I quite like it when people ask me what I'm playing in King Lear, and I can say I'm playing the fool.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 376, Playing the Fool. One of the highlights of my recent trip to London that did not include me being in the middle of a religious and political media storm was being privileged enough to attend the opening press night of Simon Russell Beale in King Lear, directed by Sam Mendes at the National Theatre. The next night was the company's first night off, and our old friend Adrian Scarborough was gracious enough to join me at the Rising Sun pub and talk about playing the fool and why he was, at least at the beginning, incredibly reluctant to take the role.
I've always sort of thought of the fool as, well, all of the fools I've seen have never been terribly clear performances, and there's always a little bit of sort of spooky mumbo jumbo that surrounds the role, which I don't really get.
How do you mean, in terms of people loving the role or loving the image of the fool with the old man?
I think a lot of what is written in the play is impenetrable babble to a modern day audience. In those days, of course, in Elizabethan times, everybody was witty and clever and listened to what people said, because we didn't have any televisions then. We didn't go to the cinema. People traded in wit in a way that I don't think they do now. And so those sorts of witticisms and a lot of the things that he says would have been understood a lot better then than they are now.
You corrected me last night, because last night was the opening night, which went magnificently, and I was thrilled to be there. But famous Shakespearean clown Will Kemp was not the original fool. It was somebody else.
It was somebody else. It was a man called Robert Armin, who'd only quite recently joined the company. And he was much more a sort of mercurial wit than Will Kemp, who was much more a sort of rough physical comedian.
So do you think that some of that stuff that's impenetrable now in The Fool is stuff that was unique to Armin, and that when we don't understand it because it was so special to him?
Yes, I think there's a little bit of that. I think there are definitely bits that Armin brought to the table, and Shakespeare obviously kind of went, oh yeah, go on then, we'll shove that in. I mean, the fact that he disappears halfway through the play, in the play text, I think it's quite interesting that he has this rather large soliloquy before he goes, and one can't help feeling that the actor sort of stood there and kind of went, what do you mean I'm not in the second half of the play? Well, if I'm not going to be in the second half of the play, I've got this big speech I'd quite like to lob in here, if that's all right by you, Will. And Will kind of went, oh, all right then, keep it quiet.
Is it possible that Armin said to Shakespeare, all right, I'll play your fool in this play about the old man, but really you've got to have me gone by the end of the first act because I've got a train to catch?
That's perfectly possible, I suppose, yes. Well, there's also the argument that when young boys played the fool, they then doubled it with Cordelia, because they're never on stage at the same time in the actual text. So you could have it so that whoever was playing the fool could also double up Cordelia.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, and not a thing that would have worked in your production, because you have a fondness for Cordelia. In the very first scene, we see you kind of give her an embrace, which is lovely and touching, and not in the script.
Absolutely not in the script. But it's hinted at later when somebody says that the fool has basically sort of been pining in his chamber for ever since my lady went into France.
Now, so Simon Russell Beale is playing Lear. You and Simon have worked together in the past, and how much is that fun? Was that one of the appeals of doing the show again?
Well, we did a production of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which was very, very silly and very, very funny and wonderful, and we had just the most wonderful time doing it. And he and I get on very well, and we're quite naughty and giggly together. So from that point of view, yes, it's not a relationship that needed working on as such. It sort of was already in existence, and there's a great mutual fondness for one another. So half of our work was done really just by putting us in the same rehearsal room together. Yeah.
So now, can we talk about the hesitation you had about taking on the role?
Yes.
Because you told me that you had been offered the part by director Sam Mendes, and I said, oh, that's awesome! What a fantastic, fantastic opportunity! And you went, is it?
Well,
what was your hesitation?
I think it is about the character, and I think that because some of it is impenetrable babble. I think you have to have a very clear idea of what you want to do with it. So it took me a long time to come around to the way of thinking that what I really needed to do was have a conversation with the director about how he saw it and how I saw it,
right,
and what we thought we'd be able to achieve in taking it on, which is ultimately what we did. So we sat down with a drink and some dinner and just sort of talked through what we thought he was about,
right,
really. And essentially came down to the fact that we just wanted him to be an ordinary bloke. We just wanted him to be a human being. Because I think what happens often with him is that people put him in Motley, or they give him, you know, a stick with a head on the end of it and a clackerbag and stick, and he bops people on the head and dances and prances about. And it sort of muddies the water somewhat.
Yeah.
Especially when you've got impenetrable babble to say.
Yeah.
So it was more about working out what that impenetrable babble was, and either cutting some of it or making sure that we knew how best to illustrate it and make sense of it, so that an audience weren't alienated by the character or the relationship between him and Lear.
Right. Well, and that relationship is so important, and I remember you saying that that's what Sam wanted to focus on, was the relationship between two old friends, Lear and the Fool, that goes horribly wrong in the course of this play.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I think one of the I read a rather marvelous book about sort of fools through the ages, and one of the things that I discovered was that they were incredibly powerful people, and that if they'd been taken on by a monarch or an earl or whoever, and they lived in that family for long periods of time, they actually became very close political allies of the person who was employing them, so that actually other people used the Fool in order to get to the monarch.
Right.
And I thought that that was quite an interesting thing. It also says in the play that he's all licensed, which basically means he can say anything.
He's the one who can tell the truth to power.
Absolutely.
Right.
So after Kent has been banished from the court for speaking the truth, we find ourselves in a position where the only other person in the court who's allowed to speak the truth is the Fool.
Right.
And speak it he does. I mean, the first scene that he has with Lear, after Lear's given away his kingdom, he absolutely bludgeons him with the same gag 17 times in a scene.
Right. Yeah, it's like the Cyrano's famous nose speech. Here's what you... Yeah.
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 And it just goes on and on and on. Yeah. Every gag is the same. He just tells it in a different way.
And Lear takes it, and you learn a lot by Lear. You learn a lot about Lear based on how he treats the Fool and accepts those jokes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a very public scene, so it's in front of his soldiers, which means that he comes can't lose face. He just has to laugh it off.
Well, and one of the great things about the national production and the resources of the National Theatre is that you have, what is it, 30 supernumeraries in the army. So you have a full army. And even on the big Olivier stage, that seemed like a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. So with the cast as well, at one point I think there are 49 people on that stage in the first scene, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. No, it was very impressive.
Hi, this is Julie York Copins from Dramatics Magazine, published by the Educational Theatre Association, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? In this winter and spring of 2014, you can see us perform all the great books abridged at the Laguna Playhouse in Laguna Beach, California for all of March. The Complete World of Sports abridged in La Crosse and Green Bay, Wisconsin for one night each in March. And the Complete History of Comedy abridged at the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts for a month in April and May. And our three-month 60-city UK tour of the Bible, the Complete Word of God abridged, continues with performances in Portsmouth, Tunbridge Wells, Windsor, Bishop Stortford, Kettering, Canterbury, Camberley, Worcester, Uppingham, Swindon, Exeter, Bedford, Grantham, Borehamwood, Eastbourne, Tenterton, Maidstone, Diss, Lincoln, Barnard Castle, New Brighton, Cardiff, Neath, Port Talbot, Nottingham, Kendal, Gainsborough, Burnley, Bradford, Holyhead, Stockport, Stourport, Burton-upon-Trent, Durham, Southport, Barrow-in-Furness, Keswick, Wakefield, Buxton, Westacre, Andover, Loughborough, Wellingborough, Tewkesbury, Solihull, Croydon, and Chipping Norton. And thanks to bat-eared listener and former RSC actor Matt Pearson, we will not be performing in Leonelli, but because in Wales the double L is pronounced as a THL, we will be performing in Flanethly. That's right, Flanethly. Apparently, that is the real pronunciation. So thanks very much to former RSC actor Matt Pearson, which is pronounced with the emphasis on former RSC actor Matt Pearson. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Adrian Scarborough live from the Rising Sun Pub the night after his triumphal opening in King Lear at the National Theatre in London. The reviews have been really great. Do you read reviews?
I do read reviews, yes, yes. I sort of think it's part and parcel of my job.
To know what everybody's saying?
Yeah, I do, really. And I think it sometimes that can be hard. And also, one has one's favourites, you know. So.
Yeah. Well, and they've kind of all described, they've said great things about you, and they've said great things, mostly, it seems, great things about the production. But they've described you as a wise and melancholic fool. That seems absolutely right based on what I saw. Is that what you were going for? Is that in the the play, do you think?
Well, yes, and I think
So you were a melancholy fool, but not a sad clown. In that you weren't a stereotype, and I guess is my point.
I hope not.
No.
I hope he's as complicated as Lear is, as any human being is. I do find it odd sometimes. Sometimes you see fools, and yes, the melancholy kind of takes over the fool.
Yeah.
And I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's Lear's job at the end of the play, and not before, really.
Right.
I think he can see exactly which way the wind is blowing, and he knows precisely what's about to happen to Lear, because he says so, and he prophesies that, you know, the whole of the country will fall into a confused state. So from that point of view, he's absolutely bang on. But it doesn't take a great intellect to see that that's what's going to happen.
Well, right, and the fool is probably not the only person who sees that, but he's the only person who can say it.
He is indeed, yes, and that gives him a very special power within the play, definitely.
Well, and I was reading an interview with Simon that's in the program, and he was saying there are four characters in the play that like Lear: the fool, Kent, Edgar, and Cordelia. And so there has to be something worth loving in Lear for them to love him. What does the fool love in Lear?
Well, they've both been together for a very, very long time, so they've had a good long relationship with one another. And I think it's very interesting that Lear really loves his youngest daughter most, which of course one should never do, but inevitably that can sometimes happen.
Well, particularly given who her sisters are.
Exactly. And the Fool also is very, very much in love with Cordelia.
Is that in the text?
Yeah. Yes, I think it absolutely is.
Because I know it's in Christopher Moore's book, Fool.
Yes.
No, which was not a resource for you.
No, well, I'd never even heard of it before. And you very brilliantly brought it to my attention, which has been great and hugely entertaining. It made it... When you're playing something like that and you're reading something at the same time, it's fantastic. It's been quite hard not to take some of that on stage.
Oh dear, Christopher Moore will be very happy to hear that.
It's a truly profane book.
But that is in the text that Christopher Moore thought so too, which is why he put it in his book, that there is a relationship of sorts between the Fool and Cordelia.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the stronger that you can play that, then the more painful it is when she goes. For both characters, both Lear knows that, you know, he's done a terrible thing, and there are moments in the play where he admits that, particularly in the first half. He lets it sort of seep out at very, very particular little moments. And every time her name is mentioned, there's a little frisson among the court as to what he's done and how he regrets doing it.
So Sam Mendes was enormously persuasive at this drinks and dinner, and he persuaded you to do the job. And one of the things that I remember you saying that he said was that, and I'm thinking that the Fool hangs himself at the end of the first act. Now, that's not what happens. In the script, the Fool, we don't know what happens to the Fool. He just leaves. He's not seen again. And it's said that the poor Fool is gone, or he's hanged. But something different happens to your Fool, and I don't want to talk about what happens. But how was that arrived at, what happened, the Fool's ultimate, you know, disappearance?
Sam is he's a very, very great director when it comes to narrative. So he makes sure that everybody's story is really, really super clear. And I think he felt very much that, because it's never mentioned in the play as to what happens to the Fool, Lear has a line at the end of the play which is, "My poor Fool is hanged." But everybody sort of says that, all of the scholars sort of say that could be he's confusing the Fool with Cordelia, which, again, making my earlier point about the through casting of the Fool and Cordelia, would kind of make sense.
Yeah.
But Sam didn't want to go down that road, I don't think, and so he wanted a very, very firm and particular end. And I think he wanted that because the play moves off in a very different direction after the Fool is dead, and Lear takes on a very different compatriot to take him through the next sections of the play, and also he's reunited with Cordelia.
Right.
So we wanted a very, very precise and definite ending, and the one that we've got, the one that we've ended up with, I don't see a problem talking about it. Do you see a problem talking about it?
No, I guess not. People will either see it or they won't.
And if you don't want to know what happens to the Fool in this production, cover your ears for 5 seconds at this tempo, starting now.
Yes. Well, Lear bludgeons him to death in a bathtub, and
but accidentally, in a fit of madness.
In a fit of absolute, yes.
Play acting madness.
Yes. Yeah. And it all it's a joke that goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And it's a
been there.
Indeed. A grisly accident.
Yeah.
Yes, like our first preview. I do quite like it as a sort of, because it well and truly finishes everybody off, and quite right too, and it comes out of nowhere. You're not expecting it, really.
It was. I have to say, it was jaw dropping and shocking. And I thought, well, this is a joke, right? This is a dream sequence. This didn't really happen.
Mm. I think it's quite useful as well, because at the end of the play, he kills the guard who's hung Cordelia, and you have to believe, I think, that he's capable of doing that. And when you've seen what a mess he made of the fool, I think it adds a certain weight to that moment, and you can kind of believe that he, in his time, has been capable of being, you know, not just a grisly dictator, but somebody who's perfectly capable of picking up a sword and running somebody through.
Well, and the play starts with him disowning his favourite daughter. I mean, where's he going to go from there?
Where do you go from there? Quite. Right. Yes.
Have you worked with Sam Mendes before?
I have worked with Sam Mendes before. We did a play at the Donmar called To the Greenfields Beyond, which is a play about First World War tank company, and very brilliant it was too. And again, he's he was the same then. He's just in pursuit of telling a really, really good tale. But I do think his film experiences have helped, just sort of battering film scripts into shape and making sure that they're absolutely precise and perfect. And
well, it really struck me watching the press night, opening night of King Lear last night, that Simon Russell Beale should absolutely play a Bond villain, and Adrian Scarborough should be his henchman. And should I write a letter to Sam? How did we make this happen?
Yes, I think a letter would probably be a good start. I think Simon Russell Beale, yes, head shaved, completely bald, no hair, yeah. And I think similarly me. I should maybe we should both be bald. Is that a bit Austin Powers? Perhaps it is.
A little bit. You're not mini me, you're mini Simon. I mean, we've talked a couple of times on the podcast, but I don't think I've ever asked you this. Exactly how cool is it to work at the National Theatre?
Working at the National Theatre is a very, very... It's a very cool place to work, especially if you're dead by the interval. Because what happens after that, for the second half of the play, is that we go upstairs to one of the boys' dressing rooms and play guitars and drink red wine and eat cheese twists. And we've sort of started a folk club up there now called the Hovellers. Because there's a hovel in King Lear, so we thought that was a rather appropriate. So we sing old turgid Scottish songs. There's an actor who plays Cornwall who's also dead by the interval called Michael Nardoni, and he's a brilliant Scottish actor, but he's also a mesmerisingly brilliant guitarist, folk guitarist particularly, and he knows all of those really old Scottish folk songs and all of the, you know, true words and everything, and, you know, which to you and me is incoherent babble, but he sang his Auld Lang Syne, because it's Burns Night tomorrow. And he wanted us to know the real proper words to Auld Lang Syne, and it was haunting, brilliant, really good. So that's what you get up to at the National when you're not on stage, that kind of thing. But yeah, it is a cool place to go. Really, really, it's my spiritual home.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. The National Theatre production of King Lear runs currently until May 28th, and there are very few tickets left for the entire run. It will also be broadcast live to cinemas around the world on May 1st, and there are return tickets and same-day seats available every day. So go to nationaltheatre.org for more information. See this production if you can. Send us your spiritual home via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, once and future fool Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to MJ Love. Great name. I hope it's real. No reason. It's just random. Special thanks to Julie York Copens, Senior Associate Editor of Dramatics Magazine. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 376 1128ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.